Hello, and I'm Will Land. You're listening to St. Andrew's very own Desert Island Discs on Star. For those of you who don't know the premise of the show, it's really quite simple. I have one BNOC on the show, and we chat and we play their 8 favourite tracks. My guest today is indeed a BNOC. In 1972, he graduated from St. Andrew's before getting degrees from both Edinburgh and London universities. He then became director of the Edinburgh Fringe and eventually chairman of STV. Now he's our rector, Alistair Moffat. Alistair, hi.
Hi there. God, you make me sound exhausted reading all that stuff out.
But, quite an accomplished
good to
life.
You. Thanks for asking me.
Is this your first time on Star?
Or? Yes. I've done interviews and so on and bits and bobs, but it's the first time I've ever been given a seat.
In this studio. And quite a studio is too. For those that aren't aware, what exactly is the rector's role?
Well, the rector's elected by the students every 3 years, and it's a role unique to the ancient Scottish universities, so there are only 5 of us. They have rectors in German universities, as you may know, being a student of German. And the proper form of address for a German rector is Your Magnificence.
Would you like me to call you Your Magnificence?
Well, we can be a bit more familiar. You can call me Magnificence.
Okay.
you're elected by the students, and you're also president of the university court, so it's a very responsible job. But in essence, like the union president and so on, you try to do your best for the students. And so, you know, we've done things like raise the rector's fund, which is to pay for internships for students. I help persuade the Kate Kennedy Club to admit women,
which they have now, I believe,
which is great. So good for them. Well done, the KK. I was a member.
Were you?
I was. And so I'm pleased to see that. And also, you know, I take on student cases, people who perhaps are having trouble with their fees or whatever it happens to be, and champion them. And so it's a lot of work, but we have surgeries, so students come and see us. Chloe Hill and I, Chloe's my rector's assessor. Mm-hmm. So there's a heck of a lot to do, And but it's a lot of fun, and it's a privilege and an honour.
A privilege and honour and a big role. What exactly is the rector's fund for or in aid of?
The rector's fund is to pay for internships in the long vacation, particularly for people who can't afford to do it, because as you know, interns don't get paid very often or usually. And so what we do is give a standard grant of £500 so that people can pay for their accommodation usually and for the odd sandwich. So an internship is important for your CV, so it's really helping on the path to getting a job. And so we've raised a fair bit of cash, and we announced the first recipients of the fund who are entitled to call themselves Rector Scholars. Rector, it looks good on a CV.
That does look good. And Rory Bremner helped with the fundraiser?
Yes, Rory has helped us raise money. We're also hoping to raise money through the Alumnus Chronicle, and we've got various other initiatives to do that. So, and the idea is that we do more things, you know. It's just because I know, having been a student here, you know, I know how tough it is. And, you know, a dollop of cash can make a big difference.
At the moment, there's quite a culture of trying to raise money for university, isn't there? They're trying to create an endowment as well, I believe.
Yes, that's right, because, you know, the reality is that funding higher education is very expensive. I think it a great pity that students have to pay fees, to be perfectly blunt. I didn't. I came here for nothing. Mm. And I got a maintenance grant from the Scottish Education Department, and my local authority paid for the tuition fees. I couldn't afford to go to university now. Mm. And I think that's wrong, because what it means is that the universities, places at universities, are being taken by people who can afford it. I've no doubt that they're merited, and, you know, it's merited and that they're intellectually, you know, very smart. But what it means is that we are not making the most of our greatest resource as a nation, which is our young people. All of our young people, regardless of income or social class. And so because we're not attracting people who can't afford to come, we're not making the most of our people. And that, I think, is fundamentally wrong. And I would recalibrate taxation and the way that we pay for education, but, you know, I don't rule the world.
No.
But I think it's fundamentally wrong that people pay fees to come.
It's quite unjust. Your first song is I Want to Hold Your Hand by The Beatles. Yeah. Why have you chosen this one?
Music really brings back memories, particularly if you're as ancient as I am. And I was born in 1950, so I was a teenager when The Beatles, The Rolling Stones, and the whole Mersey sound and so on really changed popular culture utterly. And I did a paper round in my hometown in Kelso in the Borders, and I saved up enough money to buy a record player. And the first album I bought was the Beatles album, and one of the first singles I bought, because in those days, you didn't have an iPod or anything like that. You basically bought music on vinyl, on discs, and so I Want to Hold Your Hand was one of the first things I bought, and it's wonderful.
And this is it.
I think you'll understand when I say that something.
That was I Want to Hold Your Hand by the Beatles. So, Alistair, what was it like growing up in the 50s and 60s in Kelso?
Oh, with a soundtrack like that, it was fine. It was great. I mean, I was born in what's called a prefab, which is a prefabricated house made of asbestos, so it's amazing I'm still here. And they were built for soldiers coming back from the Second World War, and it had a fridge, I remember. God, that was great in those days. My mum made iced lollies.
Kelso?
Yeah, absolutely. And the weather was better, of course. But I went to school in Kelso, and it's a great rugby town, and I played rugby there. And the reason I came to St Andrews was that my dad reckoned I'd get in the rugby team, because they had a very good Wednesday fixture list in those days, and I played for Kelso on the Saturday. The great trouble was I didn't have a car, and they shut the branch line of the railway the year first year I was here. So I couldn't get to Lucher's, and So I ended up playing rugby here. But I remember vividly getting the bus to the bus station just outside here, you know, and walking around the corner with a suitcase thinking, well, what on earth is this place like? And it was wonderful.
And where were you in halls here?
Well, I was actually, my bedroom in halls was probably almost exactly where we're sitting now. Because it was a hall called West Park, which we did our best to demolish, because it was demolished a couple of years later. And it was on the site of what I still call the New Union, which is this place. And so I was at West Park, and it had about 40 students, something like that. So it was very small. And it was terrific, because most of us were first years, and we just thought we'd joined an incredible rolling fun fair of a place. And Kate's Bar, I don't know if it's still there, is it? Used to be opposite, pub opposite, that's gone.
Maybe it's now the Blue Stain, perhaps.
Yeah, but the Crit was the other place we used to go, the Criterion, which is still there, I've checked that out. And it was wonderful, because we came in 68, right in the middle of what they called les événements in Paris, you know, the riots and so on, and student power. You know, we were much, much more politically active, I think, than students are now. And I remember Enoch Powell, the great Tory politician, coming to speak at the town hall for the Tory club. And there was a massive demonstration. He made a speech called Rivers of Blood speech about immigration, which we took enormous exception to. And there must have been 1,000 students on the street marching.
And were you yourself quite active in student politics?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember investing in a bag of flour, which I was going to try and throw at Enoch Powell. It wouldn't hurt him, but it would make a mess of his dinner suit. But I didn't for some reason. I can't remember. Maybe I lost my courage. But yes, we thought that the work, it was, you know, having listened to the Beatles create a market amongst young people, you know, identify young people strongly, you thought that it was possible for the world to change. And so maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But we certainly believed that being active was important. And also, you know, Chloe Hill, my assessor, was talking to Anne Kettle, who used to be Dean of the Faculty of Arts, and she used to teach me. And she was telling Chloe what an absolutely dreadful student I was.
Were you?
Oh, hopeless.
Quite a rebel, though.
Yeah, well, I'd even refuse to go to exams if they were on a Saturday, because we were playing rugby. and so on. We didn't do a lot of work, but we did learn a great deal from each other.
And you graduated all the same, so...
Yeah, you sort of worked a fortnight before your finals. Because everything was just right, you know, loaded right to the back end. You know, there were 9 exams, you know, 2 a day, and you finished on Friday lunchtime. That was it. It all went on that. And so if you could perform in that, and I must have, because they gave me a degree, it was okay. But, yeah, it was very different, and it is different. I think you all work far too hard.
I would agree. I think so. Yeah, definitely. And also, while you were here, you helped John Cleese. You helped in his campaign to become rector.
Yeah. I mean, it was great fun because we had these badges which said, don't say Cleese, say cheese, not knowing that actually that was his name. His dad changed the name from Cheese to Cleese.
Really?
Yeah, he did.
Understandably.
And he's a great guy. I thought he was a lot of fun. And he brilliantly brought the Monty Python team to perform live in the Younger Hall to raise money for the charities campaign, I think. And so I've seen the dead parrot sketch on the stage
in the Younger Hall. Wow.
And many years ago, I met Michael Palin again. He remembered that.
Really?
Yeah, and St Andrews. It was huge fun. We all ended up in the crit, I think. And I was sitting in the corner with John and various others. And, oh, and Terry Jones, what a nice man. It was really something.
Amazing.
This is definitely a deceased parrot, he said, banging it off the table.
And what was John Cleese like as rector?
Tall. He's very tall.
He's very tall.
But he was kind of anarchic, which I really liked. Quite grumpy as well sometimes, but he was quite anarchic. But I thought he was a great rector because you have to be interested in the students. It's about the students. You know, I mean, no disrespect to academics, but you know, they're doing the job and so on, but it's about the young people. That's why I wanted to do it. I met about 30 people because I didn't have the time to do it, and I came up and I said to Sam Fowles, it was, who contacted me, look, I'll meet people, and I did, and I was blown away by how smart and bright they were.
Yeah.
And one of the first people I met was Chloe, and we had an argument.
Really?
Yeah, which was great.
That is great.
I mean, she absolutely took me on, which I really liked. So it was, yeah, it was the students, and that's, you know, I smile as I drive from Cooper thinking, yeah, going to meet these guys again. Because my wife said to me, the only young people you know are your kids. Mm. And it was true. And now I know, I don't know, 40 young people, and it's brilliant.
And of course, you met your wife at St Andrews.
Oh, yes, I did. God, wasn't I lucky? What a lucky man. And we got married in St Salvator's in 1976. Almost, it was in March, so I was reminded I forgot the anniversary again, as usual. But 76, what's that, 37 years? Yeah.
So, well. Can you remember how you met?
Yes, I can. We met across the road in the Vic.
Okay.
At a dance. She turned up with a guy called Lenny Taylor, who played on the wing for us. He was a Barbadian, a medic, very, very good looking guy. Wonderful name, it's called Lennox Arlington Mercurius Taylor.
Oh, wow.
Great name. And anyway, I saw Lindsay dancing with him, and I thought, yeah, well, excuse me, Lenny, you know, get lost.
Here's your chat-up line. Did you have a specific chat-up line? Or?
No, I didn't. I was taller than Lenny. That was the main thing. And in those days, I wasn't the shape I am now. I had shoulders like coat hangers and, you know.
Rugby player.
It was, yeah, I mean, I remember my best chum, Tommy Powell, who became my best man. I remember saying to Tommy, look after her. Don't let her go anywhere else while I go to the loo. So that was the chat-up line.
I like it.
Pathetic.
Your next song is Then He Kissed Me by The Crystals.
Yeah.
Why this song?
Because Phil Spector changed pop music, you know, without doubt. He also apparently shot people, but that's another story. But he, what you used to have was a drum kit, rhythm guitar, bass guitar, and a lead guitar, and, you know, three people singing. So it was a bit repetitive, but Spector really put oomph and body into it, and this song typifies that.
Then He Kissed Me by The Crystals. So after your time in St Andrews, you went on to Edinburgh, is that right?
Yes, I did. My dad again said to me, you better get something you can get a job out of, because, you know, I did medieval history here. I mean, not a lot of medieval historians advertised for. So I did a teaching qualification in Edinburgh, but Lindsay was still here, so I used to commute from St Andrews to Edinburgh, which was difficult. That was a year. And I did my teacher training at Madras College.
Okay.
Which was a lot of fun. I liked it, actually. It was good fun. And I taught history and modern studies. And, Edinburgh was okay. But it wasn't where I wanted to be. But actually, it was a kind of soft landing from leaving here.
Mm.
You know, I mean, Kate Andrews, who was my assessor last year, is now back home in Connecticut. And I get these kind of emails from her, you know, because the break was absolute. But I had a kind of eased out of it.
Gradual break from it.
Yeah, exactly.
And while you were in Edinburgh, you campaigned for Gordon Brown to make one of the first student director.
Gordon wasn't the first student rector of Emory University. It was a guy called Jonathan Wills, who then went on to edit the Shetland Times, as you do. and so Gordon was second. And because I was politically interested and involved and active and so on, but I actually met him much later when I came back to Edinburgh to do the Festival Fringe. And I found myself living in Edinburgh South, where Gordon was the prospective parliamentary candidate. And because I was much more famous than he was, he used to say to me, can I put you on our constituency newspaper and so on and all that kind of thing? Amazing to think he's Prime Minister and in those days, you know, you're better known than I am. And we used to feed Gordon a lot, which was good, and he was never on time. And, you know, the macaroni would be burning in the oven. And he would always come in and say the same thing, better never than late.
Better never than late. And what was he like as rector?
He was, again, very political because Edinburgh changed the rules after that, so there couldn't be any more student rectors.
Really?
Yes, but he did a thing which I'd like to see in St Andrews, which is he gave the staff, not the academic staff, but the servitors and the cleaning ladies and the secretaries and so on, he gave the staff a vote in rectorial campaigns. And I think that's still the case now. I think Edinburgh staff, maybe the academic staff vote too, I'm not sure. Mm. But it was a time, as I was saying earlier, of real change. You know, you felt as though the world could change. And I'm not sure if people think that now, you know. I mean, or maybe it's changing, but not in a good way.
Maybe. Your third song is Anne Ubala's Erde?
That's not even
close. No. How do you say
it's,
that?
It's a Gaelic song, and it's called Anula Sarda, and it means the highest apple. And it's about education, and it's also about memory. And it starts, Kolaroma Hau and Rast, which means you're with me now. And it's the singer thinking about his father, and thinking about his education and the opportunities in life. It's an anthem, and it's an anthem for education. So I thought it was appropriate.
Very appropriate. That was Run Rig. We're just saying it's a shame that Gaelic seems like it's slowly a dying language.
Oh, it is. It's going to wither into lexical curiosity, and wonderful, beautiful anthems like that are going to become more and more unusual. I mean, Gaelic speakers are dying faster than they're being born, and I'm a learner. I'm not a fluent speaker by any means, or not a native speaker, but I thought it was, if you claim to be a Scot and a patriotic Scot without being a nationalist, then I think you should speak Scotland's languages. And, you know, that's one of them. And it's, as you hear Donnie Munro singing there, it's the most beautiful language. His voice has got real confidence in that too. It's wonderful.
Do you think the government should be doing something to...
They do, they are. They give money for Gaelic television, BBC Alapa.
Mm-hmm.
All the rugby players out there will watch Glasgow and Edinburgh playing because they've got the rugby contract. The government have not been... inactive, but the difficulty is that A, it's a very difficult language. It has no word for yes and no word for no, for example.
Yeah.
You know, and without such basic equipment, you think, how can a language survive? And as a linguist yourself, you'll appreciate it. And it's an Indo-European language, so it has links to English, but it's just not like English.
No, it's quite different.
Quite different.
In 1976, you became the director of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
How did you get involved with that?
Well, I was very much involved with the very first St. Andrews Festival in 1972, and I thought that was an absolute blast. Really enjoyed it. I was in charge of moving pianos and security. there was quite a town gown thing in those days, and there were guys who wanted to beat you up because you were a student, and I had to try and prevent that. And so I did another festival by myself down in the Borders, and then I went away to London to university and really forgot about it. And I was going to teach, and I thought I didn't really want to do that. Mm. And I saw an ad for this job, and I turned up and was interviewed, lied my head off about what I could do and what I couldn't do.
Yeah.
And to my amazement, they hired me. And it was a fantastic experience. Best job I ever had, actually, because we had no idea how to do it. We just did the next thing we could think of.
Mm.
And it was like that, because there I was, 25 years old, running the biggest arts festival in the world. I mean, how crazy is that?
Yeah.
It was great. And I had a brilliant team, who are all stars in their own right now. And we really changed it. It was great.
Are you still involved with it today in any capacity? Or?
No, absolutely, because the guy who did it previous to me stayed involved in it, and that was a real pain for me.
Mm.
And I thought, when I quit, I'll leave the parish. I'll absolutely go, and I've never gone back. They asked me to be chairman last year, and I said no, because I just think it's an inhibition on the people who are running it.
Mm.
Let them paint their own canvas. Let them do their own thing. And old farts like me are not really helpful, I don't think. They're only helpful in keeping you out of jail and things like that. But, I really believe that when you quit something, go, leave and do something else.
Do you think it's changed quite significantly since your time?
Or? No, I don't. I think it's pretty... In August, I walk around Edinburgh with a smile on my face because it's just the best place in the world to be.
Yeah.
There's so much happening. And when I left, there were 500-plus performing groups, and now there's nearly 1,000, I think. So it's massive. You can't escape it. But it's the outdoor stuff I really like.
Mm.
The kids' stuff and... the performers and jugglers and all that kind
just
of
just the
thing.
Atmosphere generally is quite brilliant. Quite something.
It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. There's nowhere like it.
And we're lucky in that so many people from St Andrews do take part in the French.
Oh, the Mermaids
well.
Did it when I was there.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. And, and I knew some of them. And did they get special treatment? Of course.
Of course, as they should. Your next song is a bit of Bruce Springsteen, Dancing in the Dark.
Yeah,
why have you chosen this one?
Well, I didn't want to sound like everything happened in the 60s or the 70s. And also, Lindsay adores Springsteen, and so do I. And he's got a sort of urgency and an excitement. And American music, of course, has been massively influential on us.
I get up in the evening, and I ain't got nothing to say. I come home in the morning, I go to bed feeling the same way. I ain't nothing but tired, man, I'm just tired and bored with myself. Hey there, baby.
That was Bruce Springsteen, Dancing in the Dark. We now get to the part of the show, which is probably my favourite part of the show, I think, where I ask you a few of these Marcel Proust questions through which we sort of create a portrait of a personality through your answers, I suppose.
Oh, dear.
So the first question is, what do you most admire in a man and in a woman?
What I admire in a man is honesty and loyalty and intelligence and exactly the same in a woman. I don't care where people come from. I don't care what they look like. I don't care about their if they're rich, poor, tall, short, fat, thin. I don't care about that. But I care about loyalty, honesty, and intelligence. And you can go a heck of a distance with that lot.
Good answer. What is your idea of true happiness?
My idea of true happiness is to be at home with my kids and with some pretty good wine and my wife and my whole family, and my pups. I got two crazy pups. One of them bit me. Look at that.
That is quite nasty.
She bit me a little bit. She pinched a box of chocolates and was about to eat them. And I grabbed her collar. She turned and bit me. Anyway.
Where is home for you?
It's down in the Borders, near between Selkirk and Hawick. And my wife breeds horses. That's what she does. And so I'll show you the pictures on my phone if you like. But and yeah, that's it. You know, an evening with my kids and my wife, and you know, only if I'm cooking.
Mm-hmm. I know
what they like. I know what I like. So yeah, that's a great, great night for me.
Idea of true happiness. What would you consider as your main fault?
Oh, blimey, there are so many. I think probably my main fault is idleness. You know, I could use my time so much better, and I don't. And also, I tend to get obsessively interested in things to the exclusion of all others. That could be a virtue too.
Mm.
And, you know, I'd like to be a little younger. So age is a fault.
Some things you can't change.
I can't change that. Well, you should only worry about things you can change.
Yeah.
You know? So I think, yeah, I could work harder, and I could perhaps be a bit less obsessive.
And your best trait? Dare you say?
Well, I hope loyalty and honesty, because, you know, those are things I value in others, certainly. And I think constancy is important. You know, if you say you're going to do something, do it. And if you pledge yourself to somebody, keep that pledge.
Mm.
And that matters in life to me.
And I suppose the next question is, what do you misappreciate in your friends? And I suppose that would be the same thing.
Well, also amusement.
And amusement, okay.
I mean, my greatest and oldest friends have the ability to make me laugh and absolutely rip the piss out of me. Because we've known each other for 40 years. Of course, there are some just shockingly embarrassing stories. And they, you know, they go for that. So
why not?
Yeah, exactly. Why not? And I'm not going to tell you where they are.
Fair enough. Who would you be if not yourself?
Blimey, that's difficult. My cousin, Jim Rennick. He played in the centre for Scotland about 50 times, British Lions and so on, played for Hoyk. He's one of the most, for a centre three-quarter, he's one of the most centred people I know. And he's just a beautifully balanced runner. Bright guy, fantastic distribution, you know, really complete player, and he never was paid a penny for it.
Mm.
He did it for the jersey.
Yeah.
Did it for Hoyk, did it for Scotland. And I just like Jim. I occasionally see him in Hoyk.
Mm.
I think he's a really complete individual. God, I didn't expect to hear myself say that. But
no.
There we are. Yeah, I'd like to be Jim Rennick.
That's nice. Do you have a real life hero? And if so, who?
Oh, blimey. A real life hero. Yeah. I mean, there was a guy I remember very well. He was a doctor in Kelso, where I was born. And I just remember, Dr. Cameron, his name was, and I just remember him being incredibly, he had a wonderful sibilant voice, incredibly caring, and took endless pains with people. So yeah, Dr. Cameron is my hero.
And what would you say your present state of mind is?
Oh, confused.
Confused.
as usual. You know, what's going on? No idea.
Confused, fair enough. Your next song is Intratina Mentis Dubia.
Well, that's appropriate, because what it means is when your mind is unbalanced. It's in this, dubia is doubt, mm-hmm. And Intratina are scales. So, yeah.
Very appropriate.
Very appropriate.
Intratina Mentis Dubia. So after The Fringe, which you left in 1981, you went on to join STV.
Yeah, that's right. I fancied telly, because it was really beginning to, I think, grow British television in general. And and Gordon Brown, my old buddy, was working there, and he said, look, why don't you try for this? And so I met them all and so on, and I had a bit of profile in Scotland, because The Fringe is a kind of, well, very visible job, and so I became the arts correspondent. Doesn't that sound good? And actually, the newsreader on the first news programme that I did with an item introduced me as the darts correspondent. So that was a bit of a shame. So I did the news for several years and presented programmes and so on, and really enjoyed that, and then became a producer, which was actually, that's the best job in television. Jeremy Isaacs, who started Channel 4, and David Putnam, the great movie producer, made Chariots of Fire and so on. That's what's on their passports, producer, and it's a great job, because you're responsible for everything that the camera doesn't see, including the director, so you can tell him or her what where to get off. And I really enjoyed that very much, and we made a lot of films. And in fact, that piece of music, Intratinamentis Dubia, I was making a series about the National Trust in Scotland, and we made a film about Inverview Gardens, and that music got me out of a hole as far as a film I was making was concerned. So I've always been very fond of it.
And after Paramount Direct, you went on to become the chief executive of Network Production.
Yeah, I was director of programmes before that, which meant I was kind of editor-in-chief and in charge of all the programmes. And we made things like Taggart and
Taggart.
You know, lots of things. Wheel of Fortune. Whoa, great show. And lots of kids' programmes. I'm just trying to work out if you're the right age for a show called What's Up, Doc, that used to be on a Saturday morning. It was only on for 3 years. But it was anarchic. It was wonderful. I used to have these two characters, these puppets called Bro and Bro, who were wolves. God, they were badly behaved. We were always getting a doing for what the wolves were doing on TV. But it was a great period, actually, in ITV. We beat the pants off the BBC for ratings, and I really enjoyed it. But I didn't want to do that all my life. And my plan was, in as much as one has ever got a plan, was to do what I could do and get as far as I could and then do something else. But telly was just, you know, for a relatively young man, was just brilliant.
And was it something you wanted to get into, or would you very much fall into it?
No, I wanted to get into it. I enjoyed it. I'm, you know, we got a TV in 1959. I remember it was about the size of a house. And I remember all the great shows like Hancock's Half Hour and so on, and all of these things, Sergeant Bilko. I mean, all these things that have just disappeared, an American show. It was talk about telly. We talked about, you know, the news and what you saw in Panorama and all of these things. And I liked the fact it wasn't, I mean, I know it's passive for a lot of people, but it wasn't for us, for my family and for my friends. And yeah, I wanted to make good TV, and I've always been interested. I used to, I made a South Bank show once about Local Hero, the film Bill Forsyth made. And I got to know David Putnam through that, and I rather admired David, and I wanted to be a producer, a film producer, but God, it's a tough life. Raising money for movies is just awful.
And you yourself won BAFTA for the documentary on Lockerbie bombings.
What happened was that I got the money together for, it was the 10th anniversary of Lockerbie, 1999, Lockerbie was 89, that's right. And it was the Robert Flaherty Award, and I was executive producer. And I remember recutting the film. My director was not happy, but I just wanted to get the outrage of parents, because that's it. The film couldn't be about the people who died. Mm. It had to be about their relatives, their parents, their brothers, their sisters, mother and father, and so on. And we had some amazing experiences with that. But I had actually quit because I wanted to leave telly when I was at the top of the tree, as it were.
Yeah.
And I think I left a month before the BAFTA Awards. So I wasn't... Really? I wasn't there.
So you were actually there.
I watched it on telly and I thought, bloody hell, my timing is lousy.
That's a shame. That is a shame. Your next song is Hey Jude by the Beatles.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have to say that where we're sitting now was West Park, the hall of residence that we were in, and it had a grand piano in it.
Mm-hmm.
And another Beegent, first year, fresher, whatever they're called there, Nick Copestick, he could play the piano, and he sang Hey Jude the first night we were here, or the second night, I mean, pretty soon after, and I was really impressed with that. And so I've always associated it with this bit of St. Andrews.
Amazing, this is Hey Jude. Make it better. Remember to let it start to make
make it better. Hey Jude, don't be afraid. You were made to go out and get her. The minute you let her under your skin, then you begin to make it better.
Hey Jude by The Beatles. So, Alistair, since leaving STV in 1999, you've started to focus more on writing and literary festivals and whatnot.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I always worry when people come up to me and say, I've got a book in me. I usually say, well, that's perhaps where it should stay. but I did do a bit of writing before then. I'd written a couple of books, and I just fancied that life. I'd found myself in charge of an organization which employed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, and you become a kind of souped-up social worker, you know, when you're doing that. And I wanted to get away. I wanted to work on my own, and that's something you can do on your own. So I did that, and I also edited New Statesman Scotland, which was a kind of supplement to the New Statesman, so that was great. And I got much more involved in politics, which was good, because when I was at STV, I was a public service broadcaster, so I couldn't. And I certainly kept up my relationships. And when we won in 1997, I just thought that was sensational. And went down to Downing Street the following week, and we went through the back. There's a kind of dining room, and they're all sort of sitting there, still talking about the election. Everybody's still high as kites, you know. And I said, never mind all this rubbish, guys. I want the $10 tour. You know, let's see around this place, you know. So we went to the cabinet room, and we went upstairs, and right up to the top. Now, this is kind of topical, I guess, where Margaret Thatcher made Dennis Thatcher breakfast famously in a documentary. Oh, really? And Geoffrey Robinson, who was Postmaster General, started opening the fridge and he'd opening all the cupboards. I said, what are you doing, Geoffrey? And she said, it's okay, boys, she's definitely gone. But I loved all that. And we also bought a place in the Borders, you know, because my kids were very keen horsewomen. And we started to do that, which is the fastest way to lose money ever invented by
really?
And I got involved with various bits and pieces. And we started a book festival 10 years ago in Melrose in the Borders. In fact, we launched it, the 2013 programme this morning. That's been a huge part of my year and a lot of fun. And I've used all the connections that I made over years in telly and at the Festival Fringe. And so we launched a programme this morning with Joanna Lumley in it. She's doing a show, and we've got Neil Oliver, the historian, Peter Alice, the golf commentator, loads of people. I emailed Neil to tell him that his session had almost sold out, and he said, what, do they think I'm Jamie Oliver? Very self-effacing. So that's been a lot of fun. And there's another book festival near Haddington in East Lothian, which I also do, at Lennox Love House, and that takes up a lot of time. So, yeah, it's been... It was a good thing, because I like, you know, and maybe this is something that, you know, people should consider. It's good to change direction and do new things, because I've observed a lot of my peers who are waiting to hang their hat on a pension and, you know, and just kind of wind down and all that. Well, wind down for what? You know, waiting for the Grim Reaper.
You know? What does the future hold for you?
Well, I think it holds a lot of interest for me, because I've been in a situation where, you know, I've written a good deal. I want to change what I write. I've written nonfiction, by and large. And also, I've got a situation where, you know, my kids need, you know, they're striking out, and I want to help them. And Lindsay and I are, you know, we have 14 horses now.
Oh, wow.
Oh, geez, oh, madness. And I want to do that. And also, I'd quite like to have a bit less pressure, and so, you know, I can do more of what I want to do, which would be great.
Your next song is, you can pronounce this, by Ishbel Maksoul.
It's an Atiroch Ard, which an Atiroch is a breaker. It's about the sound of the ocean, and it's about return, going back to where you were born. And it's an old man who comes back to Lewis, and this is the it's actually a poem turned into a song. It's very beautiful, an Atiroch Ard.
I thought
And that brings us pretty much to the end of the show. But before you go, I give you The Complete Works of Shakespeare and the Bible. And what would your other book be?
Well, the other book, it's actually a trilogy, and it's called The Warlord Chronicles by Bernard Cornwell. And I recently reread it, and it's about Arthur and Dark Ages Britain and the battle between Anglo-Saxons and native British. And it's popular historical fiction written at perfect pitch. And everybody should have a model. And it's wonderfully well done. I'd take that.
And one luxury, Chill Desert Island.
Well, I'd like to take a pretty good telly with me. And okay, there isn't going to be BBC Desert Island isn't going to be broadcasting. So I'd probably take a lot of terrific DVDs because I'm a screen kid. I was brought up with telly and I would miss it a great deal if I couldn't watch it. So that would be boring though it would sound, but that would be my
large selection of DVDs and the TV. And your last song is Dance Called America by Run Rigg.
Yeah, I mean, this is another anthem in a way because it's about politics, it's about history. On Sky, before the clearances, or during the clearances, there was a dance called America, and people danced it, and then they boarded the white-sailed ships and never came back. And it's, again, Donny Monroe, who's got a fabulous voice, and I really like it.
Alistair, thank you for being on our show.
Great pleasure.
Goodbyes of men through the past.